Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking about navigating in a city and beyond.
We'll meet Claudia Folska, who's been doing research on how the blind navigate in man-made environments and has also done some other very interesting projects, including founding iCycle for group tandem bicycling rides where the stoker is visually impaired. But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip is be adventurous and try new things. And this applies to lots and lots of situations. Most specific to this program would be getting around in a city.
You know, anytime I move to a new city, like when I moved to Rochester to start my job at Xerox, I was all alone in the city. But, you know, I had someone show me where the supermarket was and where the things I needed to get to right away were. But, you know, that couldn't last forever. And what I would do is on weekends, I would just take my cane out and follow some sidewalks around and just wander around town and learn the streets that way. I'd just go in and out and across and around and back. You know, I'd try to keep track of how many left turns I made and how many streets I crossed and things like that. And I would slowly build up my map bigger and bigger until I had a good impression of my surrounds and the layout of the city and what streets were what and all. And that's how I learned my way walking around Rochester when I first got to town.
As I recall, sometimes you would go off-road and venture into the park with your flute.
Well, that's true. Sometimes that's a little dangerous. You have to make sure you can get back onto a road if you're in the middle of some field. But you listen to different cues. When, for example, I'm walking along the sidewalk and I have my cane, you can do a lot of tapping to figure out where the walkway is, where the sides are, things like that. But when you're in the middle of a field, then I would try to use, you know, my other senses, where the sun was and feel the heat, or where noises of crowds were coming from, or particular buildings and the air vents, and orient myself that way. So it wasn't so much of a problem. But you really do have to be a little bit more aware. But, you know, the message is, be a little bit brave, try something new, and just do it by degrees, and eventually you'll get there.
And another aspect to being adventurous and trying new things is finding other ways to have fun. And at the end of this show, we'll be talking a lot about riding tandem bicycles, and that's something that the two of us have had an awful lot of fun doing.
We sure have.
And occasionally we go on kind of mini group rides. We'll get together with one or two other pairs of people with their tandems. Boy, we turn a lot of heads. Turning now to our low-tech item, let's meet Claudia Folska.
My name is Claudia Folska, and I live in Denver, Colorado. I am finishing a dual doctoral program at the University of Colorado at Denver at the College of Architecture and Planning and at the Institute of Cognitive Science at the University of Colorado Boulder. So I sort of straddle both campuses, downtown Denver and Boulder. And hopefully that'll be finished pretty soon.
If you're not familiar with the area, Denver and Boulder are less than half an hour apart. And conveniently, there's a nice bus that runs back and forth, and Claudia uses that to get herself from one campus to the other. And I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, her research is on how the visually impaired navigate in cities, and she's basically applying that work to doing her research, taking the mass transit to get from one campus to the other.
I started losing my sight when I was 5 years old, so I had a retinal disease similar to RP called fundus flava maculitis, and now my visual acuity is finger count. I have JAWS, and I also have Zoom Text, and I kind of flip between them. I use a CCTV to sign my checks to pay bills, which I don't have to do very often anymore, which I really like.
For those who aren't familiar with it, Zoom Text is a program that magnifies the computer screen so that you can see it, with lots of contrast or different colors and things like that.
And JAWS is the screen reader we've spoken about many times, and CCTVs?
Closed-circuit TV, so that you can have a camera look at some material you want to read or look at, and it displays it large on the screen with lots of contrast.
So we first heard about Claudia Folska in October. I was driving home from somewhere, and Pete was playing music with the trio, and I was listening to Talk of the Nation, because that's what NPR was playing that afternoon. And Neil Conan was interviewing her about her research. And I thought, well, you know, he may have a bigger audience than we do. He may even be a little bit more experienced at doing interviews than we are. But by gum, a bigger fraction of our audience was going to be interested, because most of our audience is visually impaired. And so I Googled her, and I found her contact information, and I sent her a note. Would you be willing to do another interview? She said, sure, she'd love to. And also, somehow Wired Magazine found out about her, and they published an article about her, also in October of 2011. We've got the full links to both the interview on Talk of the Nation with Neil Conan and the article in Wired Magazine in the show notes if you go to www.viewpointsplus.net. You can get to the show notes, and we've got those links right there if you want to actually read the article and or listen to the interview.
You are listening to Viewpoints, 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 Viewpoints,
Viewpoints. This week's focus topic is Claudia's research on how blind people navigate in what she calls the built environment. And by that, she means places with man-made structures like streets, pathways, buildings, train lines, whatever. We'll also talk with her about her prior endeavor setting up group tandem bicycling rides. But first to her research. Now, also in order to help you understand what she's talking about, she refers to neuroplasticity. And we thought it would be a good idea to ask her to define that before going into how it applies to her research.
Neuroplasticity really refers to the ability for the brain to sort of reconfigure itself based on biological constraints and environmental stimulation. For example, in the case of a person who has visual deprivation, the visual cortex is a very large part of the brain. And there are other sensory modalities in the brain, such as auditory and tactile and so on. And when the visual cortex is not receiving data from visual stimulation, it's been shown through a variety of studies in fMRI studies that different areas of the visual cortex are recruited by the auditory cortex and the tactile cortex to they become activated when those other cortexes are stimulated.
It's fascinating how parts of the brain can essentially reformulate themselves and take over some different functions and kind of like reprogramming a computer.
And some of those studies she referred to, the fMRI studies, that stands for functional magnetic resonance imaging. So basically, they stick your head in an MRI machine and watch what your brain is doing while they have you doing a variety of tasks. And it's amazing what they can learn from that. So with that as background, here's a quick overview of her research.
My research interest is in how people without sight navigate in the built environment and the sort of implications that has on neuroplasticity and what that can ultimately mean when we look at transportation. And for me, transportation is, real critical for folks that can't see. I know your audience are probably going, yeah, what's new? In the brain, the part of the brain that is concerned with navigation is called the hippocampus. And when people who are blind are out in the world navigating, then there is a little bit other, a different type of neuroplasticity. I look at how we can say, all right, these are the fundamental elements that people who are blind rely on to navigate independently outdoors in familiar or unfamiliar environments. This is what happens with the hippocampus. And the more people go out and navigate independently, the better the hippocampus is. In a way, you could say use it or lose it. The more you use it, the better it gets.
I guess it's just like the rest of your body and your muscles and stuff. You know, exercise is important to keep your muscles in tone and to keep them doing what you need them to do. And it's important to exercise your brain and make it go through its patterns and learning experiences in order to keep your brain functioning and up to par.
So in particular, Claudia's delved down deeper into the issues involved in navigating alone and why some areas are more difficult to navigate than others.
The biggest problem for people really that are blind is, in my research anyway, is this huge parking lot. And the reason that that is a problem is you can't form a cognitive map without having pathways, really. I mean, the primary dominant element of an individual's cognitive map, and the cognitive map is the mechanism in your brain that allows you to navigate in a familiar or unfamiliar area. That dominant element is the path, and every path requires an edge. Otherwise, you're going to wind up veering one way or the other, and you could veer off into some place that, you know, you have no information about.
Boy, don't we have experience with that. I remember some of the buildings I had to get to at Xerox when I had to go from one building to another involved crossing huge parking lots or huge places that were just covered with concrete, and there was no definable path that I could easily follow. It's, you know, it's a lot easier to follow a little sidewalk with grass on the side or curbs and things like that. But boy, when you're in a parking lot or a big grassy area, concreted area with no signals or you know, things you can look at on the side, it really makes it difficult to understand where you're going to stay on track. Just a few degrees off in one direction can place you very far off your path.
And sure enough, every couple of years, Pete would wind up either with an office in a different building or working with people who had offices in a different building. And I think, and every time he had to get to another building, we'd go out over lunch and we'd go back and forth and back and forth until we found a path that Pete was confident that he could follow by himself. And of course, over the years, I got to learning what kinds of paths were more likely to be successful. So I got a little bit better at finding the path. But again, it was just a question of which ones he could navigate independently. And that parking lot was tough. We wound up taking a pretty circuitous route.
Right. And usually we looked for, you know, things on the side where I could see something recognizable, a pole that I could anchor myself on and know where to turn, or a certain curb or this or that. But they were circuitous paths, but we worked them out. It took a little bit longer for me to get from one building to another, so there's a little bit of planning involved, but we worked it out so I could do it all independently.
So although she's still in school, working on her PhD, Claudia is already finding real-world applications of her research.
They're building a corridor. They call it the West Corridor, RTD, the Regional Transportation District. Well, this light rail in some areas goes through a bedroom community, and the community for a long time, maybe 10 years, has been aware that this is going to happen and really wanted RTD not to have any audible signals at grade street crossings for the light rail. And I saw that and said, what? Light rails are electric, they're very quiet, and I mean, people find themselves encountering them, you know, by crashing into them or walking in or getting run over. So, you know, it just didn't make any sense to me. So I went to a hearing about that, and as did about 60 other people who were blind, predominantly from the Colorado Center for the Blind, and objected to that with the community members there. What I learned in that process was that really the community was concerned that the audible signals that were intended to go at the at-grade crossing was those normally reserved for freight rail. And those are those real big ding, 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 you know. And they go off, well, the trains are passing every 2.5 minutes during the peak hours in the morning and afternoon. And I could imagine that would be real irritating. But when we understood what the actual sound that they were objecting to, we were able to come back and say, you know, I think it makes more sense to have a regular sort of intersection type crossing, don't cross tone. And then the community together with us built or, you know, looked into the type, the tone, the ambient decibel levels, you know, how many decibels above ambient noise should it be? So it can fluctuate too. If there's no noise, it's not a rush hour time, it's in the afternoon, it's real quiet, then it'll be 45 decibels or something. But when there is a lot of background noise, then it can be 35 or 45 decibels above whatever that noise is, so that we can ensure the safety of all pedestrians, including people that are blind.
You know, that story is a great example of the importance of communication. Once the community members understood the requirements of the blind pedestrians and vice versa and what each were looking for, they easily reached an accommodation that would satisfy everybody and work for everybody.
Another application of Claudia's research involves the emergency phones that are starting to pop up, definitely on most university campuses, but also around certain other urban areas. And so you go on your campus tour, you're going to think about picking out a college, and they tell you, oh, and we've got emergency phones, and from every point on campus, no matter where you are, you can see at least one emergency phone. Well, that's great if you can see, but if you can't see, you have no idea where they are. And so Claudia is working with the people in charge of the emergency phones to actually put an audio tone that's distinctive on the emergency phones. And, you know, I'm thinking about this. I can see just fine, but boy, wouldn't it be nice to have a distinctive but not annoying audio tone on those emergency phones? It would help everybody find them, especially in an emergency.
So she also talked about her friend in Reno who walked around with a cane and was often walking along sidewalks and running into errant bushes and trees that people didn't prune properly in his path. And he'd walk along with some kind of shears or something and cut them all down. And boy, I remember doing that when I first came to Rochester. As I told you, I walked around quite a bit on weekends on the sidewalks. And it's a real nuisance. You know, your cane is going along the sidewalks, so you're not going to trip on anything. But you reach these bushes and trees coming out at head level, and that isn't a happy circumstance. So I used to walk around with a little penknife, and I would do my own pruning and help the people out there. I don't know if it was appreciated or not, but it sure made it easier for me next time I passed.
So as they say, all work and no play makes somebody dull. Well, Claudia figured out ways to have fun in addition. And in addition to all of her serious research work, she was also the founder of an organization called iCycle to help blind people stay active and have fun.
And then I started a nonprofit organization when I graduated with my MBA called iCycle, E-Y-E-C-Y-C-L-E. I realized that, you know, while I had gone to school, I never got to play with anybody, because everything people did were all visually oriented, and it kind of ticked me off. So I thought, well, people can ride bikes, and if they get a bike with somebody sighted on the front, you can put a blind person on the back, and we can go have some fun. And we could get a lot of us doing that, and it'd be a lot more fun. And so I did that and started that in Santa Monica in 1988. And then somebody in Colorado or Denver saw an article about iCycle in USA Today and asked me to come out in 93 and teach them how to put this together. It was really one of the early public-private partnerships with the Parks and Recs departments of the municipality, and iCycle being a nonprofit 501c3. And really bringing those together. And iCycle raises the money, buys the tandems, maintains them, trains, recruits and trains the sighted captains, and teaches them sighted guide technique and how to operate a tandem, which is different than a regular bike. And then there they go. And iCycle Colorado is now, I'm on the board here for that, but they have been operating here since 93. So that's really nice, I think. And there are some other chapters. I think one grew up in Des Moines, Scottsdale, Arizona, San Luis Obispo, California, maybe Palm Springs. So they're just kind of popping up in different places. In order to bring awareness about iCycle, in May of 94, which is National Physical Fitness Month, I became an advisor to Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was the executive director of the California Governor's Council on Fitness and Sports. And I brought it to his attention that I said, you know, you guys don't have much in the way of accessible recreation, so I'm your girl. And he said, great. And I said, okay, why don't we dedicate this month to folks with disabilities and recreation? So if you do that, I'll ride a tandem across America in 30 days. And I did. Anyway, so what I did, then I got married, and I married a guy from Pakistan, so I moved to Islamabad and took my bike and found a sighted captain there and rode from Pakistan to China over the highest pass in the world called the Kunjarab Pass on this, they call it the eighth wonder of the world, the Karakoram Highway links commerce between Pakistan and China. It's really quite a road, I must say. But So I did that. I'm an adventurous kind of person, I guess, and you know, I like to try new things.
I guess she's a bit adventuresome. When do you want to bike from Pakistan to China?
Oh, I don't know. You know, the first half of that trip is uphill.
Nancy and I actually own two tandem bikes. We used to take the kids for tandem rides when they were younger, but actually we rode our tandems quite a bit. We used to bike to and from work, as well as take, you know, enjoyment rides on the weekend and stuff. It can be a lot of fun.
But if you want to get more information about this iCycle organization, you're just going to have to Google it, because the links are kind of long. And you can Google iCycle Santa Monica, iCycle Colorado, iCycle Across America. Some of these articles are from almost 20 years ago. But again, we'll put the links in the show notes.
And that's EYE Cycle, not like the iPods. So
that's
just
right.
Get that right.
Now for this week's high-tech item. Question is whether or not high-tech solutions actually help the visually impaired to navigate. So we mentioned that we had first heard about Claudia when I heard her interviewed on Talk of the Nation. Well, Neil Conan asked her during that interview whether she used an iPhone with its built-in GPS and voiceover speech output system.
I did go out and buy one of these new cell phones that Neil Conan had mentioned in our interview about finding my way. And so far, either I'm really lousy at using it, or I find myself being more frustrated and not using it at all. So I think I need to learn more about it. But I like my cane. You know, I like my cane most of all. The thing is I'm so good at navigating that I don't need any of that. I like to smile and dial, talk to people. That's it. You know, it's not going to tell me about obstacles in the distance or, yeah, detours, construction, that sort of thing. It can tell me where I'm at, which I always know exactly where I'm at, and I always know exactly where I'm going. It might be helpful for other people, right? But I'm not seeing it. And then there's the time it takes to learn the new technology. And honestly, my cane works really well. There are people who are lost all the time, and I'd say most of them are sighted. You know, have you noticed that?
I thought those were some very interesting points that Claudia made there. You know, sometimes there's a tendency to think, here's a new technology, and boy, that sounds great, and it's going to enable me to do this or that, and it's going to be so wonderful. And it turns out, you know, maybe it isn't, or maybe it doesn't really fit the need you really have. I mean, as she points out, I know, you know, even for myself, most times when I'm walking around with my cane, I generally know where I am. I know how many streets I have to cross before I turn. As she points out, something like an iPhone GPS isn't going to tell you about obstacles in the road or someone put up construction or something like that. So it may be useful for other people if you're often going to different places. I mean, just like a sighted person might look at a map or something like that. But, you know, it isn't necessarily so that just because it's a new exciting technology, it's an end-all, cure-all for everything.
And she actually had another issue that was kind of secondary to using all speech.
The other thing I don't like about the phone, you know, it talks to you, right? I mean, it has this speech activation and this accessible settings kind of thing. And then, like I had suspected, it broadcasts everything to everyone. So if you have even the earpiece in, I still have to speak out loud to tell it what to do or who to call. And of course, if I'm in a public place, everybody around me knows it. Not that it matters, but I just have a lack of privacy, I think, and that's unsettling to me.
So before you pick up some new technology, figure out if it's the real technology you want or need and how your personal habits and things you need to do will work with that particular solution.
And another thing you might want to do is go back to the archives and listen to show 1142, which focused on GPS units that had been developed specifically to be used by the visually impaired. And in that show, we reviewed ways to get around using several different GPS options that were designed for the visually impaired. We explained how to use PC-based mapping tools and also a free telephone service called Tell Me that you can use to get directions. So there actually are some other alternatives that might work better for you or might not. Maybe you're just happy with your cane and you know where you're going and that works and that's fine.
But there are choices out there and you ought to at least know what the choices are and then make your decision based on the best choice for you.
So if you want to contact Claudia Folska for more information, here's her email and telephone number.
My consulting firm is called Virtual Vanguard, and they can reach me at cfolska@virtualvanguardllc.com. And Vanguard is spelled V-A-N-G-U-A-R-D. That's 303-525 2411.
And Folska is spelled F-O-L-S-K-A. That first letter is a F as in food.
So it's good to know that people who are designing these things have someone they can look to get some advice because, you know, this isn't a very common thing to think about the visual impaired moving around your city or your neighborhood. So it's good to get some ideas from someone who's studied it.
That's it for this week's show. This was episode 1205. You can find it in the archives. And next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about the Bookport Plus, its current and future capabilities. We'll be interviewing somebody from the APH to learn more about it and talk a little bit about where it's going in the future. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to viewpoints@wxxi.org or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, produced by Peter Torpy and Nancy Goodman Torpy in collaboration with WXXI Reach Out Radio. To subscribe to the podcast, access a full archive of shows and show notes, or to find out more, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.